you know, in so many of the interviews that I went on, I would meet people in cafes that were by the ocean. We'd drink coffee, or if at night, you know, drink beer. And people would literally gesture towards the horizon, talking about their overseas relatives and their own attempts to migrate over the years. And so there's this kind of, you know, kind of bodily relationship to the ocean, and this gesturing to what they call obenkia, or over there, this kind of awareness that having made it to the other side, people had the opportunity to try to really transform themselves and their bodies. And yet those who stayed behind have not been able to do that. And so Vietnamese who had made it to the US, for example, were quite concerned about the conditions back in their homeland for their family members who were still there. And so, because there were no banking channels or financial channels, they would put together boxes of things that they could send to their families. And so these boxes would have, you know, electronic items or ballpoint pens or all kinds of things that basically people couldn't get in Vietnam. And family members would go to the airport or to the local people's committee to receive these things, oftentimes losing a cut from cadres in the process. And then they would try to sell those material things on the black market for, you know, basic everyday foodstuffs and things they needed to survive. So, you know, the period of time where people couldn't return to Vietnam, the material things that were sent were a lifeline, and they also created a placeholder for family members that were unable to return. In the 1990s, you start to see this changing. Financial channels start to open up. 1995, the U.S. restores diplomatic relations with Vietnam under Clinton, and you start to see other forms of remittance channels. And yet, this long period of material remittances really kind of defined in many ways those transnational kinship relations. And so those material remittances continue today, and that when diaspora Vietnamese come back to Vietnam, they continue to bring big boxes of things that they distribute then to their family. So a lot of these things are now kept by the family and used, but some of those things continue to be sold on the local market for extra cash. There's a very strong correlation between receiving remittances and wanting to migrate. And when I would talk to people about, well, why do you want to migrate to, you know, say the United States? People would say sometimes, well, I want to migrate there so that I can send money back to Vietnam. I remember one person who said, he said, I want my daughter to go to America because she can become a better Vietnamese in America than she can become here. They felt that in Vietnam, because of the hardship experienced during the war and after the war, you know, especially when Vietnam was embargoed by the United States and other Western countries, that it was very difficult to be generous to others. And so therefore, this kind of traditional idea of gifting was disrupted. And this itself often led people to think about the about their desires for migration, and that people would say, I can be a better Vietnamese living in another place because there I can have more economic opportunity, and I can therefore cultivate this generosity that I really can't cultivate here when I'm just dealing with, you know, kind of day-to-day survival. In this area that I was working in, there was a lot of temples to a whale god that was a traditional deity followed by fishermen. And the idea of the whale god was that the whale is a deity that helps keep fishermen safe at sea in storms, and they also help fishermen get good catch. Fishing culture is going away, but at the same time, there's actually a revival of many of the temples. I would go around and I'd see these rebuilt temples to the whale god. Many former fishermen that had left as refugees and were now sending money back to the whale god as an expression of gratitude for the fact that, you know, these boat journeys were very dangerous. Some estimates say that almost half of the people that tried to leave by boat perished at sea. And so there's this idea of fate, you know, and that some people made it and some people did not, and quite tragically did not. But for those who made it, they also send remittances back to support these whale god temples to express gratitude for having safely made these journeys. And so through these very acts of generosity, they also perpetuate the idea, you know, in Vietnam that it's worthwhile to migrate because, you know, look at the money that you can make. They're literally demonstrating that with their return remittances. After Dodd-Frank, it became more difficult for some of the small ethnic service providers that were sending remittances back. And so there's also been a formalization of the remittance market where people are increasingly starting to use formal channels such as the banks or Western Union. And, you know, this economy of kind of middlemen who were also people that were in the community is also starting to fall away. So all these shifts are quite interesting to trace because it really shows how, you know, the channels and forms of remittances also have a very important effect on the kinds of relationships that are maintained between the homeland and the diaspora.